Very good. Well, this is exciting. As it's kind of been mentioned, I was a speaker at Senior High Youth Camp in the Camp Challenge in Bedford this summer and did three messages. Last week was the first of them. Today is number two. We may be referencing last week a little bit, but hopefully no one will be too lost. So last summer I mentioned that I never went to church camp as a kid because my parents never made me go to church camp. So I'm going to tell you about the first time that I did go to church camp. And it starts with the summer of 1999. I was getting ready for my last year of college at Anderson University, in between my junior and senior year, where I was a Bible and religion major. And what I was thinking is that I would go into pastoral ministry after college. And that summer, I had an internship at a church in Anderson called North Anderson Church of God. And that internship got off to a really crummy start. I got in there, I just felt very disconnected. I felt like I couldn't connect with the kids or the staff. I felt isolated, and I felt like I'm just really bad at this thing. So I was getting ready to start my senior year and thinking, I'm barking up the wrong tree. I got to figure something else out for my last year to do something different. And as I did, as I wrestled with that, fortunately for me, I had a few distractions that summer that kept me from wallowing in my misery and being overly self-critical. And the big one was I was in love that summer with a girl. And so that preoccupied my time in between failing at the church. And the other thing that was the nice distraction that summer beforehand was that my family, my grandparents had planned this trip that we'd been working on for 8 years or so to Israel, and it was going to happen there within like a month of me starting. So we had this trip, and fortunately, we were able to go and have this family trip. And in Israel, there were two things that happened that were really important to me, that would influence me. The first thing was that I would buy an engagement ring. Yeah, I'd buy an engagement ring. So, that ring was burning a hole in my pocket. So right when the plane touched down, I was ready to propose. And she said yes, so that was good. And then I will mention that even though my parents never made me go to church camp, that church made me go to church camp. So I was forced as a 20-year-old to go to church camp for the first time and do a week of like middle school church camp. So I was thinking, oh, okay. But it was right after this trip to Israel. So I went as a lovesick 20-year-old who was just desperate to reunite with my fiance at the end of the week. So that's where I was. There was a second thing that happened in Israel that I'll tell you about a little bit later. But before we get to that, let's get back to the story that we started last week. It was a guy who started out as Simon, and then Jesus added the name Peter, so we're calling him Simon Peter this month. And Simon Peter had this encounter. So we're going to go back to last week just a little bit. He was a fisherman, and he had this time where he was cleaning his nets, and Jesus just happened to be giving a sermon where people were gathered around to hear the word of God. And Jesus asked to borrow his boat. So after Jesus finished up, he told Simon Peter, who had had a night where he caught nothing, he had the financial pressures of going home, not catch fish at a time when fish aren't likely to bite, and he did, and he caught a lot of fish. So when he came in, Simon Peter reacted by looking at Jesus and saying, "Go away from me, I'm a sinful man." And Jesus ignored him and said, "Come with me now, you're going to be fishing for men." And so then it started. So Simon Peter followed Jesus for the next 3 years. Now near the end of it, the last night of Jesus' life, it was really crucial. It was crunch time. They're starting to feel the pressure. The opposition was getting stronger. Jesus was under all these threats. And Jesus met with his disciples for one last time. And his right man was Simon Peter. And he looked at Simon Peter, and he predicted famously that Peter would deny that he knew Jesus three times. Peter insisted that it would never happen, but as the story goes, Simon Peter denied him three times. He failed Jesus. He failed various times on that night when Jesus needed him the most. So we're going to pick up the story in Luke 22, 59 through 62. This is the story of Peter's third denial of Jesus. So the first two, after the second one, Luke says, about an hour later, another person asserted, certainly this fellow, they're pointing at Simon Peter, certainly this fellow was with Jesus, for he is a Galilean. Peter replied, man, I don't know what you're talking about. Just as he was speaking, the rooster crowed. The Lord, that's Jesus, he turned and looked straight at Peter. Then Peter remembered the word of the Lord spoken to him. Before the rooster crows today, you will disown me three times. And Simon Peter went outside and wept bitterly. At this moment that this happened, when Peter blew it after a series of missteps all night, he has this time. He told Jesus he's willing to die for him, be arrested, whatever. You can count on me. Jesus had called Simon Peter, Peter the Rock. So Peter felt like he was this right-hand man. He was going to be the one in crunch time. When all the chips are down, he was going to be the one that could be counted on. And when it counted most, he proved that he could not be. And he was devastated. And in this moment, again, the Lord turned and looked at Peter. Now this, when it says that Peter remembered the word the Lord had spoken, this was not going to be hard for Peter to remember. Right? This is one of those things that's going to stay with him. Like sometimes there are just these things that happen and it's like, man, if only you could forget it, but you can't. And this is one of those things that Peter is never going to be able to forget. Right now, Peter is really in danger of being defined by his worst moment. How many of you have ever heard the name Bill Buckner? I know Roger. I'm expecting Roger. Oh, okay, there's some. All right. Now, odds are when you hear the name Bill Buckner, your mind goes to one play. So a little bit of context here. This really dates me. The Boston Red Sox won the World Series in 1915, led by star pitcher Babe Ruth. He was a pitcher back then. And then, for some reason, the Red Sox traded Babe Ruth away to the hated rival Yankees, where Babe Ruth would go on to win all kinds of championships, set the home run record, become the most legendary baseball player ever. And it was after the Red Sox traded him. All the while, the Red Sox just kept losing. They called this the Curse of the Bambino because that was one of the nicknames of Babe Ruth. So 1915 was the last time that they won, and Boston had to watch New York win over and over and over because of the Curse of the Bambino. And in 1986, the Red Sox were one out away from winning the World Series. There was a slow rolling ground ball hit to first baseman Bill Buckner. All he had to do was field the ball, step on first base. The curse of the Bambino is broken. The Red Sox win the World Series, and everybody's happy. But somehow Buckner missed the ball. Bill Buckner missed the ball, and the Red Sox would go on to lose the World Series. And so now, whenever the name Bill Buckner is uttered, most people think of his worst moment. Bill Buckner had a 22-year major league career. That is a long time. He was a good player. He was even an all-star. He won a batting title for the Chicago Cubs. Maybe it was the curse of the Cubs, right? That was the problem. But despite all that, despite what a good player he is, he's remembered for his worst moment. It's not really fair. A better comparison than Bill Buckner to Peter is maybe Judas Iscariot. Like Peter, Judas spent 3 years with Jesus. Judas was with him in some great moments. He did some good with Jesus. When the chips were down, he failed. He had betrayed Jesus. And like Peter, Judas regretted what he had done. But he could not escape it. He was defined by his own worst moment, and he would end up taking his life. And now whenever the name Judas is mentioned, people remember the worst moments of Judas's life. Peter sort of has that potential. He has blown it. When all the pressure's on, he's blown it. People may forget all the great things that he had done earlier, all the great things he was a part of. And maybe this is what Peter is going to be remembered from, blowing it when Jesus needed him most. It's possible that Jesus thought this, or it's possible that Peter thought this was a possibility too. Maybe Peter had thought that he had blown it so badly that he was now defined by that as a choker, as one who couldn't be counted on. Because Peter decided to go back and fish for fish. And in the Gospel of John, he tells us this story. So maybe this is evidence that Peter thought, my days of fishing for people are over, now it's time to go back to fishing for fish. So there were six other disciples, and he invited them to go out onto the lake one more time for fishing. John 21, 3 through 6 tells us, I'm going out to fish, Simon Peter told six fellow disciples. And they said, we'll go with you. So they went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Sound familiar? Early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples did not realize that it was Jesus. He called out to them, friends, haven't you caught any fish? No, they answered. He said, throw your net on the right side of the boat, and you will find some. When they did, they were unable to haul the net in because of the large number of fish. Sound familiar? What does this sound like? Thank you. Yeah, that's a thank you, Jacob. The first time. This is going back to the beginning. This is so familiar because something very, very similar happened 3 years earlier. Where Simon Peter and his friends spent all night, they didn't catch anything, and then Jesus tells them to throw the net out again, and they do, and they catch a huge amount of fish. Huge amount of fish. All right. So now I'm going to go to that second thing that happened to me while we were in Israel that affected me at that first church camp I went to at Camp Challenge. And it was this. As a 20-year-old who was thinking, I'd blown it. Like, I'm not cut out. I got to figure something else to do. This feed my sheep thing, this ministry, I'm just not good at it. It's for people who are more outgoing or extroverted or whatever. It's not the kind of people like me. As I was doing this, at Israel, we first went to Tiberias. Now, Tiberias, and go ahead, there's a map, I think. Tiberias is where I bought Jenny's engagement ring. I don't know if it's clear enough to see, but it's kind of in the middle of the Sea of Galilee. We mentioned earlier that the Sea of Galilee is also called the Sea of Tiberias. So when it's close to Tiberias, they called it that, or the Lake of Gennesaret. So we bought this engagement ring at Tiberias and went up north on the Sea of Galilee along that coast. We passed Magdala. Magdala is where Mary Magdalene was maybe from. And as we went up there, I remember just seeing these sites. And we stopped at this one place that was the site where they said that this encounter that Jesus had with Peter had happened. And so we went there, and I just remember how powerful it was. As we got there, and I pictured the scene. I pictured the early morning light, and Jesus showing up and hollering out to the disciples in the boats, hey, you caught any fish? No, we haven't. And then Jesus said, throw your nets on the other side. And then they're just being overwhelmed with the fish that were coming into their boat. And then them realizing, oh, that was Jesus. And Peter putting his coat on, jumping in and swimming in. I pictured that fire where Jesus was cooking the fish and warming the bread, again, reminding them of the five loaves and the two fish, and this scene. And then I pictured after breakfast, Jesus pulling Peter aside and having this conversation where three times to reaffirm him, he said, do you love me? And Peter says, yes, you know I do. Feed my sheep. And as I pictured this scene, I just became very emotional, overcome with emotion. And I realized why. Because for me, as I remembered this story, Jesus' reaffirmation of Simon Peter was also a reaffirmation of me. Like Simon Peter, I'm not cut out for this. I don't know about my place. And like with Simon Peter, Jesus said, feed my sheep. feed my sheep. Well, recently, as I looked at a map of this, and there's that little red balloon on a place where this church is set up, and this scene where they say that Jesus and Peter were on the beach, and the place is called Gennesaret. Now, if you remember back from last week, Luke calls that lake, the first time that Jesus meets Simon at the lake, he calls it the Lake of Gennesaret, which indicates that's probably the general area where it happened, which makes a lot of sense too, because Peter was from Capernaum, which is really close to Gennesaret. So it's like this is about the same place, and it's about the same thing happening. And what Jesus seems to be doing with Peter is taking him back to where it all started. Remember 3 years ago when I called you? Nothing has changed. Don't be defined by your worst moments. You haven't blown it. What mattered now was that Simon not stay stuck in his worst moments. Jesus knew about what Simon was going to do, and he called him anyway. Now, if Simon Peter would have just kept ruminating over what had happened, he wouldn't have been able to come back. Peter would always remember Jesus' words about denial, but would he be able to remember the words that Jesus spoke right before? They're in Luke 22, 31 through 33. These are the words that Peter would need to remember. "Simon, Simon, Satan has asked to sift all of you as wheat, but I have prayed for you, Simon, that your faith may not fail. And when you have turned back, strengthen your brothers." Now, if Simon would have stayed stuck in his worst moments, he wouldn't have been able to turn back. He would have been trapped in that shame. He would have been beating himself up and not able to come back. He would have felt still so unworthy that he couldn't have strengthened his brothers and his sisters. Again, it mattered less now to Jesus that Simon had stumbled on that night, and more that Simon would turn back. Jesus was calling him back to the beginning and inviting him to turn back. The resurrected Jesus met Simon where it all started, back in the Lake of Gennesaret, back reminding him. And I can only imagine the healing that was taking place in Simon Peter's soul as Jesus was taking him back to the beginning and saying, "I still want you. Don't stay stuck in this moment. You're still called. Do you love me? Feed my sheep." I can only imagine. Because in that very beginning, if we go back to the beginning, the story was that Simon had tried all night and failed. But when he listened to Jesus, great things happened. Everything changed when he listened to Jesus. Back at the beginning, Jesus was reminding Peter where to put his faith. He prayed that his faith would not fail. On that very lake, Simon had come toward Jesus and walking on the water. But when Simon Peter took his eyes off Jesus, he sank like a rock. Maybe that's why Jesus called him Peter, right? He sank like a rock. Okay, I know that was corny. I was hoping for a little bit more of a laugh. Peter was the rock because he sank like a rock. And Jesus knew that. So on his own, Peter was the rock who would sink. But Peter learned that even when he was sinking, he was never beyond the reach of Jesus, the Christ, the Rock of Ages, the Son of the Living God, the Rock of Ages, who is strong enough. And that's where the real rock is. Wherever we are today, a lot of us may feel like we're sinking. We may falter in our steps, but we're never beyond the reach of Christ, who's always calling us to turn back and follow, not to be defined by our worst moments, but to come back and follow him. Will you pray with me? And feel free to just read these words too if you want to pray along. This is the Lord's Prayer. This is the way that Jesus taught his disciples to pray when they ask, "How do we pray?" "Our Father in heaven, holy is your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. Forgive us our debts as we also forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Yours is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Amen.